All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, it's a weird one. We are talking about David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future. It's our first time covering a Cronenberg movie, and we had a lot of fun trying to figure out puzzle pieces for this one. Joining me is film writer and lecturer Alex Cronenberg. Cronenberg, you know, that's, wow. But Alex Cronenberg is his first time on the show, and we had a great talk. We got a lot of great puzzle pieces on this one, and that's coming up in a second. Before we get to the conversation, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can, of course, find us on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Spotify, all the major podcast apps. And if you like what we're doing, hit the 5-star button. We'd appreciate that. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And before we get to the conversation, I do also want to remind you, we have a Patreon. As a matter of fact, this episode's going up on the Patreon as soon as I finish exporting it. And it will come out whenever the film ends up on a regular rental. Right now, it's one of those $20 premium rentals. I'm going to wait till it hits regular rental and then post this one on the main feed. But if you're one of my patrons, you get to listen to it now, along with a lot of other advance and bonus content from Piecing It Together, as well as Awesome Movie Year and from my music career. So check it out. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. Now let's talk about Crimes of the Future. All right, we are going to attempt to piece together Crimes of the Future today, the new David Cronenberg movie. And joining me to talk about it is Alex Cronenberg, a film lecturer and writer, and it's his first time on the show. Alex, how's it going?
Absolutely fantastic. What a pleasure it is to be on the show.
Happy to have you. I think we're going to have fun today. This is going to be such a strange movie to talk about, but we'll get to it in good time. It is your first time on the show. Why don't you tell my listeners a little about you and what you do?
Sure, yeah. I've been lecturing about film at various institutions in the UK for about 10 years now, and writing and freelancing mainly about horror for a range of different sites in the UK for about 8 of those years, and podcasting as well with various kind of friends and contributors and horror fans, and just love talking about film with fellow fanatics, really. So this should be a really interesting piece. I don't know how we're gonna fare, to be honest, David, but we'll give it a go.
We're gonna give it our best here for sure. And is Cronenberg you know, one of your favorites? Like, I mean, as a namesake, I mean, you know, who in the horror community doesn't love David Cronenberg? But I mean, are you a big fan?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always been fascinated. I think it probably did start by the fact that, you know, I'd look on my dad's VHS and, well, probably would have been VHS shelves when I was a kid, and I could see my name there, and I was like, is this guy related to us? Like,
sure.
And then I watched his films and I thought, I hope he's not related to us. And so, yeah, but my first kind of engagement with him was probably Existence in 99, I think it was.
That sounds right. Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it, and then kind of like worked my way back. But I think The Fly was one of the later ones I watched, only because my mom was like absolutely like terrified of it, and used to kind of say to me, do not go near that film, like that film is kind of evil, and sure. You'll never look at Jeff Goldblum the same way again. And so that was one of the later ones that I came into contact with.
Yeah, his films do have a certain element to them where you're like trying to imagine how the generation before us like took them in, and like, you know, they must have thought it was just so completely insane. And now we're maybe a little more used to things that push the envelope and try all kinds of weird stuff and have like interesting unique worldviews, and of course the gore and horror elements of it all, but it must have been just nuts to experience this stuff firsthand when it was coming out.
Yeah, and we, you know, now we kind of get glimpses of things before we even come into contact with them. We hear things online and we see kind of hints that something's going to be outrageous, and But you know, my mum and dad's generation, they just went in, they went into a film completely cold. They didn't really know what was going to happen or what terrifying scenes they were about to see. So that must have been so shocking to see some of those things that they'd never imagined, you know, it wouldn't have been in their wildest nightmares to then actually see it come to screen. And I think that must have been exhilarating. I kind of wish that we could go back to that kind of like complete darkness and go into stuff completely cold, because I can't remember the last time that I really did that, to be honest.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen. And, you know, especially with the rise of streaming, it's like, you know, you just, it's just all there. And, you know, streaming and social media and all of it, like, it's all there, which are, you know, possibly themes that we'll get into while talking about this movie. But I think we'll probably end up talking about a lot of Cronenberg along the way. But let's start getting into some puzzle pieces. What do you have for your first one?
So obviously, I've kind of like structured mine with Cronenberg, first of all.
Sure.
So the first one, as I've mentioned already, is Existence.
Sure.
I think that is like, it could be within the same universe, these two films. Like, this could be in the future, within the Existence kind of like universe. So the film focuses on gaming in this sense, less on art, which Crimes of the Future is very much focused on art and
sure.
high art. And this one's focused on like gaming and how gaming has advanced to the point that humans biologically connect with consoles and then enter some sort of virtual reality and go into like a comatose state whilst they're experiencing this game. But they're very, very similar themes. Aesthetically, they look very, very similar. You know, a lot of the technology that you see in Crimes has almost been lifted and expanded upon
mm-hmm.
from Existence.
Yeah.
That organic, like, spinal, it's like skin stretched over mechanics. It's like, it's really unusual and unique.
That chair is freaking weird.
Oh, that chair. Yeah, that chair. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. And I spent half the film trying to understand what the purpose of the chair was.
Yeah.
And now I kind of want one.
Yeah, I mean, it seems very comforting. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Getting a hug while you're eating your dinner. but the, you know, even the way in which the characters interact with that technology, it's like caressing, you know, he's got like a module or like almost a pad in which he controls the surgical unit.
Yeah.
And he caresses it and he prods it and he treats it as if it's like a creature. And that's very, very similar in Existence. It's about kind of like, that line between machine and living organism is really explored and expanded upon in Crimes of the Future. And you also have kind of themes of rebellion and terrorism and putting a stop to advancements or changes within society. And I think those themes are very, very present in Crimes and Existence.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, not that I'm up for shared universes or like kind of like cinematic universes, but I would be so fascinated if Cronenberg came out and said, oh no, this is all a part of the same,
yeah,
you know, same sort of world. And I'd be like, let's see where that goes. Yeah.
It's interesting. And like, it goes to Existence and it goes to, I'm sure, some of the other pieces we're going to talk about, but it has both an extremely negative and a somewhat slightly positive view of that convergence of machines and humans and the organic and the technical. So it's definitely something that I think he's like constantly wanting to explore. And obviously the past 10 years or so, he's been kind of off to a tangent doing these other kinds of films, but certainly these are things that he's, you know, been doing for many, many years. My first puzzle piece, I only have one Cronenberg on my list, and I think it goes right along nicely with Existence, and that's Videodrome from 1983. You know, you got your video games in there, we got videotapes here, and we've got, you know, again, the convergence of humanity and technology and the advancements in technology, where we could potentially end up going, and just how, like, messed up we could get ourselves as we continue to go down that path, which is all happening. Like, yeah, this is all like sci-fi and weird and just kind of big ideas, but at the same time, there's so much of it that is happening and is going in that direction. I think that, you know, also, you know, bringing in the body horror, there's, you know, there's has been touted as, you know, his return to body horror, Crimes of the Future. And, you know, you get some very similar disturbing imagery in Videodrome that, you know, kind of uses body horror in the same kind of way. So you've got that too. And I feel like, you know, you starting off with Existence, I mean, these three are like almost like a clear path, I feel like, between them. And then the other thing that I feel like would connect it with something like Videodrome is the big quotable moments. Obviously, Long Live the New Flesh in there. And here it's Surgery is the New Sex, you know, is like such a clear, like, mission statement, sort of, but also just like a quotable that, you know, can easily be at the beginning of every review.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I also love that line. I'm not very good at the old sex.
Yes, that's another good one.
I had a little giggle at that. I would say that we've got like the corner pieces of that puzzle now, because I think those three, and perhaps the one that I'll mention next, are certainly in there. Like them, they're just part of the same thread. And I'm really interested about the fact that he's come back to body horror now after a long time away from that. He's got some great stuff. I love all of his reflective stuff on America and History of Violence and Map of Stars and Cosmopolis and all that. I think they're fantastic, but I'm happy to see him back. Yeah. Family in the genre that made me love him in the first place.
Yeah. And by the way, this, I read that this was written in the 90s, and it's just a script that was laying dormant. So even though there are things that, you know, one thing that I was thinking, you know, and I feel like anybody would think this, is that, you know, living through the current pandemic, like, probably brought this kind of a story to mind, but it is something that was already, you know, kicking around in his mind for many, many years before. So I think the fact that it shares some threads with these other ones that he was doing back then in the 80s and into the 90s also makes sense.
Well, yeah, and it just goes to show how much of like a lasting director he is. He's so forward thinking. Like, these films are an ever present and are incredibly relevant now and will be for the next however long. You know, he's great. I'm a big fan.
Sure.
So my next puzzle piece then leading on to that would probably be The Brood, 1979. So another Cronenberg. And the reason why I've gone for this one, you know, other than maybe Crash and some of the others that maybe fit a bit more neat, is that I like the line of parenting. It kind of like has like a comment on parenting in both of these films.
Mm.
So within The Brood, obviously, I think it's a very angry film because he's going through, I think I remember reading he was going through a pretty nasty divorce at the time. And so he wants to make this film about kind of like family and broken family and stuff. So that film itself showed this maternal relationship with a daughter, which is abusive and physically and emotionally abusive. And then you have the father who's the father of the mother in film. Quite confusing. And he kind of turns a blind eye to the abuse and doesn't really get involved. And I also think The Crimes reflects that as well. Like, we have a mother right in the first 5 minutes, and what a shocking scene that is, where
sure.
she kills a young son in quite a visceral and hard to watch scene. I thought, yeah, it was quite a tough one. And then we've got a father who's obviously quite absent, and she rings him and calls him and tells him that she's killed him, and the reactions are unusual, not what you would expect. He kind of goes and just calmly like kind of covers the boy up, and he's obviously an absent father that only kind of arrives when his son's passed away.
Sure.
So there are those themes of kind of like absenteeism, isolation within parenting. I think that's really interesting to explore with Cronenberg, and he never presents these relationships in a kind of like warm and cozy way. It's not the most kind of like pleasant family atmosphere.
Yeah, that's an understatement. But yeah, I actually haven't seen The Brood. It's one of the many Cronenberg movies I actually, you know, is on my long catch up list. But still, like those family and generational aspects of the story, like, that is something that, you know, maybe isn't as present in something like Videodrome or Existence. So certainly, like, dealing with that kind of element of this kind of story, certainly it's a good one to bring up here. I'm going to take it away from Cronenberg for a second here and go with the dominant part of the film culture at the moment, superhero movies and the X-Men series. These people in the future, in this strange, I don't know if it's necessarily soon, you know, or further down the line, but people are starting to mutate. They're starting to have these new evolutions as human beings. The main crux of the story is on them growing new organs and no longer feeling pain. There's all kinds of weird stuff, some of which are elements of what could make up some of the mutants in an X-Men, you know, story. Also with the government, you know, wanting to either control or study or stop them, or, you know, there's always some kind of like government agency after these mutants and these people that are exhibiting these new kinds of like weird powers and abilities and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully Cronenberg's not going to be making a superhero movie anytime soon, but at the same time, it's kind of hard not to look at what's happening around us and, you know, bring a little bit of it into it to what you're working on.
Wasn't The Fly a superhero movie?
I guess it was in a way, yeah.
Similar to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. It was on my list as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that kind of restriction of evolution and trying to monitor and keep track of this kind of new mutant or evolved species, and then that battle between the old humans and the new humans. I think that it's all present.
Yeah.
It's all present in Crimes, definitely. Completely agree.
Absolutely. What do you got for your next one?
So I'm sorry to pull it back to Cronenberg, but I'm going to go for Brandon Cronenberg. So his son, Antivirus, and I don't know how much David would be influenced or inspired by his son or how that works, like kind of like both ways, and that's quite an interesting thing. But Antivirus is a really unusual, as you can imagine from his son, unusual film for 2012, and it focuses on like celebrity and how people become so obsessed with celebrities that they want to purchase a disease or an illness or a condition that somebody has and contract it and take it on. I don't know. Have you seen it?
I have. And I was sitting there like thinking like, how could I fit Possessor into this conversation? And I didn't, but I completely forgot about Antiviral. Like, that is a great piece. It really does kind of fit with what he's exploring here.
Yeah. And I like that conversation about how people become famous. I think in Antiviral, it's just like people don't need a reason to be famous. They're just famous.
Yeah.
But in Crimes, they're like a guy literally grows ears all over his body and like sews his mouth shut, and people are kind of deriding him a little bit and being
sure,
like, oh, there's no depth. There's no depth to that. You know? Yeah. And I think that's quite interesting. Like, it's quite hard to get fame in that world, but in the Antiviral world or the modern contemporary world, it's much easier. But there is actually a line in Antiviral where I think that can't be coincidence. Like, that, I wonder whether David has taken that and ran with that a little bit. And it's the main character, the protagonist, is in a line of queue to get into work, and one of his friends or his colleagues is commenting on a celebrity and how lucrative that celebrity might be. And he says that the celebrity has a unique non-functional organ connected to a urinary system. That's basically Saul, isn't it? Is it not? It's basically what's happening in this film.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, that's maybe Brandon got his hand on the screenplay.
Yeah.
We know the screenplay was written 20 years ago. Maybe Brandon read it and was like, this is interesting, you know. I don't know, but there definitely is. There must be a connection there between the two. But yeah, it's all about obsession, about what our bodies can do if we manipulate them, if we allow them to go their own way and don't intervene at all. And the similar threads from father and son there. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it really?
Right. No, absolutely. And yeah, that's a great piece. And I feel like it would be just the best thing if we could one day get like a round table, like talk, like a podcast or something, just the two of them just talking about these ideas and figuring it out. I actually like don't know. I haven't like watched interviews or anything like that, like how David feels about his son's movies. Like, I have to assume he enjoys them, what he's been doing, but I don't know.
Oh, he must. It's not like Brandon's gone on and made kind of something completely unrelated to David's work, but maybe that makes it harder for David to be a critic. I don't know. It's a really sure. interesting. I'd love to hear that podcast, David. So set it up.
I will moderate. I am happy to do that. I will go. I don't usually do this, but I'm going to bring up a documentary for my next puzzle piece from 2007. My Kid Could Paint That, which was an interesting documentary that like deals with like, you know, like what even is art, what qualifies as art. And, you know, you were just talking about the guy with the ears all over him and how everybody's kind of like turning up their noses at it. Like, oh, that's, you know, what is that? That's not even like anything, you know? And so it just made me think of that documentary and how it's like, just this idea of like the pretentious side of the art world and what actually qualifies and what is just somebody just doing stuff, like just throwing paint at a board and like, oh, is that really art? And that does seem to be like kind of some of the central stuff going on with not only the characters, but I feel like Cronenberg is dealing with that as well here. Like, I feel like maybe there's a little bit of meta-ness to it of like, you know, getting older and questioning, you know, his impact in the world and, you know, what his stories are saying and whether he still wants to tell these kind of stories, whether he feels he has had a positive impact and done some interesting things. And so like just the idea of what is art and what qualifies as art, I thought that was a really great documentary back when it came out. I haven't seen it since it came out, but it was a really fascinating and interesting one.
I don't think I've seen that one. No, I don't know that one off the top of my head. It sounds fascinating though.
Yeah.
I need to check it out.
It's a cool one. It's definitely, I'd recommend that. What do you have for your next one?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to skip ahead then on my list because I feel like one of these fits perfectly with what you were just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Is The House That Jack Built, Lars von Trier, in 2018.
Yeah.
Which you've just hit the nail on the head, really, about that question of art. There are so many conversations in this film about what consists of art, how do we justify what we're making, and you know, is it for entertainment? Is it for enlightenment? How does it benefit society? There are all these questions when discussing art, and they talk about it a lot in the film. Especially Leah Seydoux's character has a lot to say about it, and she seems to do most of the justification for their performance art. But yeah, so The House of Jack Built, I feel like these films are very interesting. I don't know, with Cronenberg, he's such like a maestro that I almost can't imagine him being inspired by anything. I almost feel like his yeah. head is just this like...
yeah.
like a melting pot of crazy lunacy.
This is like the second episode in a month that I've had this issue. Like we just did Phil Tippett's Mad God and I'm like, what inspired that? You know, like nothing really inspired it. It's just his own thoughts and, you know.
Yeah. But he must, I guess he's a human being. He must see stuff. He must like look at whatever and kind of be provoked or inspired or whatever. So I'm sure maybe he did come across Lars von Trier and he did watch The House That Jack Built. And that film is a similar thing where Jack, the serial killer in the film, views his murders as serving a higher purpose. He's mm-hmm. creating a masterpiece. He's putting together a philosophy that society will look back on, and perhaps he's bettered society with his murders. And he talks a lot in that about art and about like society and shines a light back on society from his own murders.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, begs that question, like, can artwork be inherently evil? Can what you create be evil? Or if you're observing it as an audience, does that mean say something about you? And I think like all these questions are very, very interesting. I think it probably are ones that Cronenberg is interested in, because why performance artists? What, you know, why base it in the high art world, this yeah. film? Because there's no other reason to do that apart from ask some questions and poke that itch a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think Crimes tackles a lot of those questions. I think whilst Jack feels that he's commenting on society and helping it, Saul, Viggo Mortensen's character, almost refuses to act.
Sure.
And uses his art as a pause button. So he can remove the organ and it stops that evolution. And really what he needs to do was to stop his performance art, let the evolution take place, and then he becomes part of something bigger.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting, and it is almost in parallel with the house that Jack built, which I know has its haters, but I think it's fantastic. I think it's a good film.
Yeah, that intersection, you know, there's so many things intersecting in this movie, but that intersection with art and violence and that's such a major drive of the story and of what's being explored here. And yeah, that's a great one. I'm going to go with a curveball here while we're talking about the art world. And I am going to use Zoolander as a puzzle piece. talking about the pretentious art world and just all these like weird artist parties and all like the oddballs that show up to them. But most of all, the real reason I wanted to include Zoolander on this, even though it might seem like a ridiculous piece, is we haven't talked about Kristen Stewart yet, who I feel like is the best part of the movie. She's just so interesting, her performance. Like, I love what she's doing here. And all of the interactions between Kristen Stewart and Whippet are just so weird and strained, and like all these like stares and half spoken lines and weird like line delivery reminds me of Mugatu and his assistant Todd, if you remember the way that they would like talk at each other with little grunts and like, you know. So I had to include it on my list.
I never expected Zoolander to come up in this conversation. But I have a theory about Kristen Stewart's performance, which is probably even more kind of weird,
okay,
which I'll come on to later on. But it's certainly out there. It's even the way she holds herself is so uncomfortable. You just want to like shake her, loosen up.
She's just a mess in this. And another performance that it kind of reminded me a little bit of, I wasn't going to use it as a puzzle piece, but Kiefer Sutherland in Dark City. Also just like another like weirdo, like in a sci-fi, you know, like she's just very strange. And I just love how she's delivering her lines. It's just really interesting stuff, you know?
She acts it very well, because I think that character is obviously like completely conflicted and doesn't know how to present herself, and is fascinated by this world and turned on by it and completely like obsessed and, you know, wants to be a part of it, probably wants to be cut, and you know, who knows what's happened to her in the name of sex and science and all things unholy. So I think she exudes all of that with like quite an interesting restraint. Even that whisper, I think I'm a fan of Kristen Stewart, actually. I think she's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
Great one. I did not think that was enough. So my next piece then, from 90, I think there's like lots of 99 or the 90s in this, is The Matrix. So the Wachowskis.
Sure.
One of my favorite films of all time. And I think that I would imagine, I think there are too many parallels for David not to have seen this, David Cronenberg not to have seen this and been thinking about the same issues that they were. I think it's quite widely kind of talked about that The Matrix is an allegory for trans rights, people being able to express themselves and shift their identity. And David Cronenberg himself has kind of commented on this in the media and said that, well, although this was written 20 years ago, he feels like it's a bit of a roundabout, and that talk about that question of who controls women's bodies, who controls the bodies of transgender people, I'm quoting here, who controls the bodies of transgender people, it's like, are you allowed to do that? Can the government actually tell you what to do with your body or not? Even if it doesn't affect anybody else, it becomes a kind of hot button. So he said that himself recently in interviews about crimes, and I think The Matrix was one of the first films to openly address those questions and offer a hand of support to many trans people who were closeted, who felt like they couldn't be who they were, who they felt that they were on the inside.
Yeah.
and gave them representation. And I think even at the time, maybe when it came out, it wasn't as apparent as it is now, but you had characters such as Switch, I think the character's called, who was originally written to be female on the in the Matrix and the male in the real world. So that was the original character, Switch, and then they changed that round. I think they were told to by the producers to change that to have both characters a Switch, although Switch does come across as kind of without a gender, and doesn't really kind of assign to any gender. I think that's really interesting as well. And so that film really plays with those ideas, and Crimes does the same, in asking those questions about, does the government own our bodies? Does the government have a right to track us, to label us, and stop us from being who we want to be? And it's kind of sad, and I think he's absolutely right, David Cronenberg, in saying that these questions shouldn't still be a question, but they are. And I think that's why the timing of this film's release is so amazing, is that he's had this film for 20 years and he's come back to it and thought, my word, this is still happening right now. I need to get this out. I need to have a voice on this topic. That's absolutely fantastic. I really, really admire that. Especially, I guess, for a man of his age, because, you know, it's easy to get older and not be in touch with the world, I suppose, but he still is, still got his finger on the pulse, which is great. So I see a lot of similarities with the Matrix. I see a lot of the same kind of even design, and there's a piece of equipment that Kristen Stewart uses to look at the inside of Saul's body.
Sure.
And it looks exactly like the equipment that they used to extract the bug from Neo in the back of the car.
Yeah.
The guy who sews his mouth shut is very similar to Neo, where his mouth kind of fuses together and he can't open it. So there are a lot of aesthetic similarities, even like the televisions and the text on the televisions. It looks like he's really like playing with that, with the aesthetic of the Matrix and the Matrix trilogy. So the Wachowskis, I feel, were a powerful force when he was thinking about how should I portray these images in this world.
Yeah, and definitely the Wachowskis, I think, hugely influenced by, you know, the earlier works of Cronenberg. And, you know, all that, like, thinking about, like, all these interesting ways that technology and humanity converge and where things are headed. And yeah, the trans reading of the whole story is, I think, a really interesting way that, you know, this movie can be read. And there's so much packed into this movie that, like, you know, it's really kind of interesting that there's so many different things, so many different threads happening. But yeah, The Matrix is a great piece to include here, and a great setup for my next piece, actually, because I was going to talk about the Aliens series. You know, especially the artwork, you know, you were talking about the design, like that tool that she's using. And, you know, we talked earlier about that weird chair and, you know, all kinds of weird technology in this movie. A lot of it just feels, you know, a lot like the H.R. Giger, you know, artwork that inspired the Alien series, all the design of the ships and all that kind of stuff that really kind of meshes, again, like the electronic, like technological type stuff with very almost human-like designs, and it's very kind of hard to place exactly, you know, where our world would ever get to having design like this. But it makes for really interesting and unique, you know, locations and sets. Another thing, aside from the actual technology they're using, are the locations, actually, where they are. Everything just seems so run down, and it just seems so obvious that humanity has just let shit go in this future. And whether that's because of all of the evolution happening and the mutation and all that, or if it's just, you know, people being people and we are pretty terrible, you know, maybe we just let shit go and that's all there is to it. But that also kind of, there's elements of that, I think, in many of the Alien movies as well. So between The Matrix and Alien, I think you get a lot of that, the look of this futuristic world.
Yeah, I think we've got a big chunk of the puzzle there because I've got Alien and Prometheus on my list.
Nice.
Even the, you know, the acidic fluid that the boy secretes is very similar to Alien. We have like the surgery pod in Prometheus.
Yeah.
And questions about evolution and where did we come from. I mean, that's all there. And my next one actually after Alien was going to be Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. So Ridley Scott has got a lot to answer for with this film as well. And I think you mentioned there about how humans have really let the planet go and not looked after it. I think it's a similar situation with Blade Runner. And you have a body of people or replicants who are much more better suited to survive in this environment, similar to the evolved mutants within Crimes of the Future, who they can like eat plastic now and kind of live off plastic. And so we can kind of get rid of some of that waste. The replicants are the same kind of beings where they don't need the sort of organic matter that we do. And then moving on to Blade Runner 2049, you have a very similar story where something which is synthetic, like a replicant, gives birth naturally to a child. And in Crimes of the Future, these people are making themselves evolve in that way. And then a child is born who has the ability, the natural ability, to consume plastic and to be this evolved creature, human being, however you want to call it. And so then we have the savior story again. So we have the serious savior story with what we thought was K in Blade Runner 2049, but it wasn't actually K. It was Stellene, I think it was, or Stellan. And in Crimes, we think it's Brecken, the boy, but in actuality, it's Saul who could be the savior and could be this messiah type character who's going to save and is the natural offspring of synthetic and manipulated life forms.
Yeah. I was trying to think, that's funny, I guess Blade Runner 2049 might be the movie I was trying to think of. I was trying to think of something fairly recent where something that wasn't human basically was able to give birth, and like that probably is the movie I was trying to think of, and I just it was at the tip of my tongue. But I feel like a lot of times when talking about a movie where you can spot some alien influence, there's going to also be some Blade Runner influence. I mean, Ridley Scott in general, yeah. You know? So yeah, absolutely. Talking about the plastics and eating plastics, that leads me to my final puzzle piece, actually. Another kind of curveball possibly. But speaking of that final scene where Viggo finally eats that plastic chocolate bar and, you know, we don't know exactly what's going through his head, whether he's able to digest it and he's happy or he's sad about, like, you know, or horrified that is what's happening, and or, you know, or maybe he's proud of where he's at that point. Either way, that chocolate bar, I thought of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory because it is a very convincingly amazing looking classic chocolate bar, even though it's made of some kind of synthetic plastic stuff that you will die if you're not evolved enough to eat it. I kind of wanted to eat it. You know?
Yeah, it looked delicious, didn't it? Yeah. I'd give that a go. No problem. Yeah, it looked like we have these things called wham bars over in the UK, and they're basically, they must be made out of some sort of plastic, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But they like crackle and pop and they're like chewy and they look exactly like those bars. And I was like, I could really go for a wham bar right about now.
Delish. Yeah. They say that there's little bits of plastic and freaking everything now. And, you know, you were just talking about it while talking about Blade Runner, but like, I do love, like, I'm a little mixed on this movie overall. Like, I liked it quite a bit, but I'm also like not 100% sure on some of the aspects of it. But I love the idea of the plastic. Like, I love that humanity is obviously destroying itself with our, you know, overabundance of waste and especially plastic. And like the fact that we would evolve to eat that as a solution to that. I mean, isn't that what evolution is like in the grand, like long-term scheme of things, is adapting to our environments and, you know, survival of the fittest basically. And so those people evolving, being kind of like the savior characters of humanity, it's a really interesting place for the story to end on, I feel like.
Yeah, and I just love a story where I think for the first 20 minutes I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I, you know, to start, I really love that where you can't grasp the world, the characters, what's happening, what's that machine for. There's so many questions, and then it slowly just starts to make sense. And they're the ones that kind of leave their mark on me, and I continue to think about and want to talk about for kind of years to come. And I'll definitely revisit Crimes. So I have a couple of others, but I'm gonna go for my my real oddball choice as my last piece.
All right.
So my last one was The Jungle Book, from 1967, or you know, whichever iteration of The Jungle Book you wanna go for, because they're all fairly similar.
Sure.
So the reason why I've gone for that is it started off at a very simple thought that the Brecken looks like Mowgli.
There you go.
Okay. He's sat in the water, he's kind of picking away at like a natural habitat. He comes inside, he kind of hunches over, he's got like the little shorts on, and I was like, okay, well, he looks a lot like Mowgli.
Sure.
And then I started to think about it more and more and thought about, well, Jungle Book to me is a lot about fear of upset of the status quo. You know, Shere Khan is just afraid of Mowgli. He's afraid of the threat that he poses, of the advancement that humans are making and how that can encroach on their own civilization and their own kind of environment and ecosystems. And he's terrified of that. And so he wants to put a stop to Mowgli. And that means killing Mowgli, essentially. He wants to put a stop to it. And I feel like Crimes is a very similar thing, where the threat is Brecken. He's a threat because he represents every fear that the government has about stopping people consuming, stopping people being kind of people who go along with whatever the government say and the status quo and the norms and all that kind of stuff. And so they must stop that at any kind of opportunity, any way that they can. And that leads me on to my even weirder theory about Kristen Stewart. I believe Kristen Stewart is doing an impersonation of Kaa the Snake from The Jungle Book.
Oh, there we go. Wrapping it all up. I love it. Yeah.
She is the backstabber. She is the one who does the surgery and kind of betrays Saul and Lea Seydoux's character, I think Clarice,
Caprice.
She's got that serpent voice. She contorts her limbs in very serpentine ways. And I feel like she's the kind of the snake in the grass. And I would kind of like link her to that Kaa character. And maybe if I try hard enough, I'll find a Baloo.
Yeah.
If they're somewhere. Maybe it's the guy with all the ears on him. I'm not too sure.
He looks cuddly.
Yeah.
Maybe
there's something to be said there. I don't know. But maybe I'm reaching with that one. But I could definitely justify it if I really had to.
Well, I love it. Like, you know, just to the general point of that fear and feeling that he needs to kill the kid, and like the overreaction that, you know, humanity, we always are constantly just overreacting to everything, it seems like. And so, you know, I think that really does kind of tie in that way, at least if nothing else, like, although actually it's all very convincing, but, you know, if nothing else, the overreaction of people in the future in this world to what they're doing with their newfound abilities or newfound, you know, evolutions, everything just gets so freaking weird. And it doesn't necessarily have to go that far into this strange, like, post-apocalyptic world. It really doesn't need to go that far, but that's what people do, you know? And so I think that's a good way to kind of tie that in.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that I got you on board with that one. I didn't completely lose you at that point. You just turned off.
Love it.
Shut down your computer.
Absolutely love it. So I will read down our finished list here, and we'll get into some closing thoughts. But we, of course, talked about a bunch of Cronenberg movies. We had Existence, Videodrome, and The Brood in there. And there's a few mentions of some other stuff, too. But then we got on to X-Men, Antiviral, My Kid Could Paint That, The House That Jack Built, Zoolander, The Matrix, the Alien series, the Blade Runner series, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and the Jungle Book. A very wide-ranging list of puzzle pieces on this episode, for sure. But there's a lot going on in this movie, so I think it makes sense that it would be such a varied list, you know. But I don't know. Are there any thoughts on this movie that you wanted to get to that we didn't quite get to while doing the puzzle pieces?
No, I think we covered most of that. I just think that filmmaking and successful filmmaking is all about timing. And I think David Cronenberg has bided his time with this one.
Mm-hmm.
He's had it living and hibernating in there, and perhaps he's had inspiration over those 20 years. And he's come up with a piece which is both nostalgic in the source, in the way he presents it, but also cutting edge, meaningful, and something which a lot of directors would absolutely strive towards and would be their best work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, yeah, this is the kind of movie, you know, I feel like we're all constantly saying we wish there was more of right now. You know, it seems like, you know, obviously there's superhero movies, then there's just the run-of-the-mill horror movies, and then it's like, what else, you know? There's not enough other stuff that like really explores interesting, you know, ideas like this. And, you know, even if the story is a little confounding and maybe on first viewing, you're not going to quite get every last detail, it's interesting filmmaking. And that's what we've been craving lately, you know? And so, yeah, I think it's definitely successful when it comes to that. So, yeah, I think that does it for Crimes of the Future. Alex, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
I watched a movie called Blue Jay fairly recently. I'm a big fan of Mark Duplass. I think he's a real kind of pioneer and spans the genres. And Blue Jay is a really lovely and short 90-minute film about two high school lovers who parted ways after an event and then find each other again. And it's really beautiful. And it will leave you kind of with a warm heart and thinking about your own past. And I think that is it's a really nice reflective film.
Awesome. Yeah, I like a lot of Duplass stuff, but I don't think I've seen Blue Jay. So I'm going to have to look that one up. So awesome. Great. Alex, why don't you tell people again where they can find you and everything you're up to?
Sure. Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter if you want to, under at Cronen Words. So Kronen Words. As I said, I write for a number of websites, including Moving Pictures Film Club, Horrified, and lovehorror.co.uk. And I've just got a piece out about Stephen King and the most traumatic moments in Stephen King adaptation. So check that out if you're into your Stephen King.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm really happy that we finally got to do this. I know we had discussed talking about a couple of other movies over the last like 6 months or so. We've been trying to get you on, but I'm happy to finally have you on the show. I hope you had a good time doing it.
Oh, it was so much fun, David. Anytime, man.
That's Serena over there.
And that's Naomi, and we are the hosts of Weird Mythic Podcast.
Yes, we are. Our show, Weird Mythic, covers stories about cryptids, which is what brought us together to create the show. But we also like to talk about anything paranormal and strange that happens in the world.
We post episodes every Sunday on different topics, and we would love to have more listeners. We're on all podcast platforms, and you can find us on all social media sites as well. Give us a listen, send us some personal stories to share on the show, and we will love you forever.
Yes, we will. We would love some personal stories, some cryptid encounters, and we hope that you listen and tune into the show.
You can listen to Weird Mythic Podcasts wherever you get your podcast fix.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Crimes of the Future. Thank you to Alex Cronenberg for joining me on that one, and thank you to all of you for listening. If you're enjoying what we do here on Piecing It Together, make sure to rate and review on whatever podcast app you are listening on. And of course, make sure you're subscribed. If you happen to be listening on Good Pods, which a lot of you are, and I really do appreciate that, they do have a little comment section per episode where you can drop some comments. And if you thought of any interesting puzzle pieces for Crimes of the Future that you think we might have missed out on, drop some comments with some puzzle pieces. I will read them on the next trailer episode. And I always love hearing from you guys and hearing about any puzzle pieces you think that could have been on an episode. Also, always looking for new guests, so get in touch. I'd love to have you on sometime. That does it for today's episode. Make sure you're subscribed, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, and don't forget about that Produced by David Rosen Patreon. I told you about it at the top of the show. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Sign up. Lots of great stuff over there. So I'm going to close this out with a piece of music, and I know I've played this song many times over the years as the closer for episodes of Piecing It Together. But if you're going to talk about Crimes of the Future and all of David Cronenberg's body horror and cutting into all these human bodies and pulling out organs and blood dripping and all this stuff, I got to play Cut Open from my album An Unseen Sky. This track is the only logical choice. So we're going to go with Cut Open, even though I've played it before. Hope you enjoy it. An Unseen Sky is available on all of the major streaming services and iTunes and all that kind of stuff. So go check out the rest of the album, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.